There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
It's bursting with fruit flavor, no added sugar, and all smiles.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible. And with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on my favorite shows with.
Yes, Lil Bowen. Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support, keeping me feeling great all day long.
You deserve that. Try new Bubbly Burst.
You know that I feel like it's really important to express yourself.
I know that about you.
You got to put your true self out there, okay? And those classic Crocs, clogs, and sandals let you do just that.
Between the rainbow of colors and the Jibbitz charms, you can create a unique look. And I mean, literally, no one else will have shoes exactly like yours.
Hey, you know, it doesn't get more comfortable than Croc clogs and sandals. They're just the perfect blend of comfort and creativity.
Visit crocs.com to explore the latest styles and Jibbitz charms.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Bowen.
And we want to introduce you to the new Cantina menu at Taco Bell.
Ooh! It's an all-new chicken menu with fresh new ingredients. Great as a lunchtime option.
Taste for yourself. The slow-roasted chicken, pico de gallo, purple cabbage,
yummy,
and new avocado verde salsa sauce.
Okay! With new menu options like Cantina chicken tacos, burrito, and quesadilla, there's something for everyone.
With this new Cantina chicken menu, the possibilities are endless.
Try the new Cantina chicken menu at Taco Bell.
Do you want to boost the economy like Taylor Swift? Do you want to run a business empire like Rihanna?
Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper.
Intuit helps you take control of your finances through products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, Intuit.com to start living yours. Let's get into it.
Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see. My, oh, my. Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that culture? Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
Feeling pretty whimsical about this one.
This is an episode of Whimsy, I would think. You know, we were just in a group chat that was exhumed from the grave.
Oh, what? Talk about it.
Okay, this little tidbit. So.
Oh, yeah.
John Michael, who is Joel Booster's boyfriend,
correct,
was, I guess, at a function with Joel. Mm-hmm. And one of the co-writers of the first Scary Movie approached them both.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, this sparked a debate among the group chat of which of the movies are good. And someone posited, not even necessarily in the group chat, but someone posited that one is the only good one and the rest are flop. And we have to vehemently take a stance on this program, Las Culturistas, and say that that is so deeply untrue.
I feel that I have, first of all,
we've talked about Scary Movie 3 ad nauseum on
this
podcast.
It's canon on this podcast that Scary Movie 3, which is, of course, not the first, but second sequel, which is how you know a franchise is a huge success. When it has more than one sequel, that's a rule of culture number 14. When a movie has more than one sequel,
that's
is how you know
no,
it's a huge success. And Scary Movie 3 is the funniest film of all time. It has great performances.
It defined a generation.
And you said that. You did say it defined a generation.
I'm not even kidding. I'm dead ass about this.
My ass is so dead from knowing this. Can I tell you why I'm upset?
Why?
I'm upset today because, and it's debilitating.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I have debilitating sadness today, as you can hear in my voice, because I won't be with you on Thursday at 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time when Midnights goes live.
I know. Where will you be?
Okay, get this. I'll be at Halloween Horror Nights, absolutely screaming in terror, running from hired actors in masks and spooky garb.
Weapons.
First of all, explain this physics to me.
Don't give these actors weapons.
They have weapons. They have blunt objects. And here's the thing. This has really happened to me. This was really, really happened.
No.
When I went to Universal Studios Florida, Orlando, get into it.
I'm there.
I went into an American Horror Story themed,
you told me this,
themed maze, and a woman who could only be described as Angela Bassett, took a knife and did this to me, Bowen.
Oh, my God.
She tried to hit me. And I was like, Angela, I've been a fan. I've been a huge supporter.
You don't want it to end like this.
You don't for want either this of smoke. Us.
No. You don't want this smoke, Angela.
I will defend myself. And then not only that, but there were easily 7 to 10 Lady Gagas running around, sort of not really trying to strike you, but more posing, which I felt was
of
right.
Of course. How many Cheyenne Jacksons, Evan Peters, you know, Billy Eichners were there?
Oh, well, I didn't see any of them. But maybe that's because, and this is what my theory is, that was really Angela in there.
So you thought Angela was in Orlando trying to stab you?
First of all, she's an actress of the stage. This is a great stage.
It's true.
I'm saying, like, first of all, can I say something to you? Don't limit thespianism.
I'm not doing such a thing.
You did such a thing just now.
I have doubts that it was the real Angela Bassett swinging a knife at you.
Do you have such doubts? Great performance from Meryl.
Amazing Meryl Streep.
She's so talented, Meryl. You know who else is talented?
Hmm.
I was going to say Lydia Tarr. But
can I say something? So for the first time in a long time, and I always try to honor this, but Matt Rogers put it to the group chat, the other group chat with me and our guest, put an assignment out and said, both of you, I recommend both of you go see Tar before we record the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And can I tell you, I had a pretty light show this week with Megan Thee Stallion hosting.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to have a chill Thursday or a chill Friday after I wrap on this pre-tape.
Mm-hmm.
To go and watch this movie that everyone's been talking about that I can't wait to see.
You didn't get to make it there.
Was stuck in the studio until midnight every night this week.
That's okay.
I haven't seen it.
That's okay. And can I tell you something? I was looking through your schedule because I, of course, have two Google calendars, one for me and one for you. And I was like, this is not going to work for him, I don't think. I don't think there's enough hours in the day for Bowen to go see the nearly 3 hours Tar. Starring, of course, Kate Blanchett as Lydia Tarr.
Lydia, I'm not worried about the sit.
You shouldn't be worried.
I powered through Drive My Car last year on Super Bowl Sunday in Pasadena.
Okay, well, first of all, can we just say touchdown on that one?
Touchdown. And I was really kind of defying American culture on that day by going, I'm going to watch this Japanese-ass film.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. So I'm not worried about the sit. But yeah. I am sad that I won't be able to engage in a conversation. I think our guest might have seen it.
He did. So what I said was just a minute ago was, you know, who's a talent? And I was going to say, of course, and I
Lydia Tarr
did what my brain is wont to do since I've seen the film, which is sort of drift back to Tarr and then sort of sit in thought. But you know who really is talented? Bowen is our guest. And this guest, let's just say this. It has really been too long.
Since the guest has been on the show, shut up.
I feel like this is someone. Okay, and this is honesty zone.
Give the honesty right now to the readers who depend on you for it.
We were a fledgling little podcast for, I would say, about a year and a half to 2 years.
We were so young then.
We were, and then our guest pulled us out of the morass into the open clearing where the air was pure and clean and good.
The sermon you're giving right now, I'm obsessed.
And said, come on my show, Pop Rocket. And that was, I think that was like the first sort of like warm embrace of like, oh, here, come in, talk to us. We have this listenership. Who knows? It'll go from there. And I think that was like that was the first like building block into building like the second story, the upper floor of the Lost Culturistas edifice.
The high ranch.
The high ranch.
Lost Culture is a high ranch, and it's really culture ranch. Number 16.
Lost Culture is a high ranch. How many floors? How many floors does the ranch have?
So a high ranch is very interesting in terms of construction. Because you go in and then immediately you're met with stairs that go up to like a second level. And then there's usually a basement.
The garage.
So
the basement,
technically it's three floors because there is that like sort of area where you decide, shall I choose the smoothest course? It's cocoa and bod when you go into a high ranch.
Yeah.
Because you can either go upstairs or downstairs. And I don't know what's happening on either floor. Like what's your cocoa and what's your
John Smith?
Period.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can't wager to say, but Lost Culture is that. Our guest is one of the stars, and I would say one of the breakout, like, brightest spots of the film.
I could have used more of them, to be honest.
Oh.
Not to note. Could have used more of our guest.
Of course, it needed more of our guest.
The movie is Bros.
And I'm willing to bet a lot of the Katies and the readers and the publicists have seen.
Of course, we spoke about this film a couple weeks ago. One of the funniest movies of the goddamn year. And it's, listen, I just know from having a little birdie on set, Bowen Yang, that our guest was a major part of that, which doesn't surprise me in the least.
And this is a huge word for me right now and always.
Say it.
Was cared for because our guest was there, was being so wonderful, was not on the call sheet that day to be on camera, but was there in a producerly capacity, writing the best alts. I said,
I bet he was excited you were going to be there and said, I'm going down to set today.
I have a little line that says, congratulations, you made it to the Obama administration, but what's that around
this
the corner?
This was a high point of the film.
True, a true Guy Branum pitch through and through.
That line earned a scream from me. It earned a scream from me.
Well, that scream, you have Guy Branum to thank for that.
Manola Dargis, more like Manola Faggot, me Manola screaming Faggot. At Bros in the theater. Might as well call me Manola Faggot.
Faggot.
We have to get our guest in immediately. Everyone, please welcome into your ears for a triumphant return to Lost Culture. Please welcome Guy Branum.
Thank you so much for having me. Good to be here. The light of Lost Culturistas has shone bright from its first moments. It needed no help. Those
Manola
who were
Faggot
called to it found it. So much to say. Like, I just love the idea of Angela Bassett taking a break from whatever project she's on for the month of October to reconnect herself with her craft.
Yeah.
The immediacy of her craft.
I trust her implicitly.
Was so revved up for a full-on three-way Tar conversation.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I was in Davis, California for Parents Weekend for my niece Olivia, well-known
to the
show.
Shout out to Olivia.
What a wonderful individual.
Wonderful.
Ed was like, oh shit, I have to go see Tar, but it is only open in major cities. So I had to drive down to San Francisco.
No.
No, for like, again, 2 hours and 45 minutes of Tar, at the end of which I was like, again, like it was like a ride. I was just like, give me more of this.
Bowen, you're gonna be obsessed. I left feeling a little different. I left being like, what the fuck was that? And it marinated in me. And then I realized, like, probably 12 hours later that it was, I think, actually the only relevant art I've seen in years.
Oh my God.
Like, what is Todd Field? Just the whole idea of, like, what is this man who, like, makes in the bedroom, disappears for 10 years, makes little children. Disappears for 16 years, and then comes back with this, which, it was a wonderful experience that has electrified me. And it's so good to get to see you guys. What a lovely way to round out a weekend.
That's lovely. And you're now in Yuba City.
I'm in Yuba City, the prune capital of the world. As you guys know well, I now have an intimate relationship with the California Prune Board, for which I am an ambassador, and thus must
so happy.
Speak highly of, the delicious charm and sophisticated culture of California prunes that people should indulge in whenever they have the opportunity.
I don't think I could tell you what a prune even tastes like.
I've enjoyed a prune.
I bet you have. That really tracks, Bo.
I like a prune.
They're rich and jammy and whiny.
Now, tell me, I don't want to muzzle any Tar conversation between the two of you. I'm happy to listen.
Well, there will be no spoilers because it's also like, it's also not about that. So, Bowen, basically what I love about this movie that took me a second to realize, because you leave the movie and I feel like in most circumstances, like you leave a movie and you think, what was that movie trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that like, this film is about this, you know, essentially like, comically like awarded and celebrated conductor and musician Lydia Tarr, who's played by Cate Blanchett, who is about to conduct Mahler's Fifth. And it's like they're going to be the crown jewel of her career, and it's just this like fever pitch of celebrating this individual at the height of her career. And basically what the movie is you witness her fall, her cancellation,
yes,
if you were.
Yes.
And what I loved about this movie is that it truly makes art of the question, can you separate the artist from their art.
Yeah.
And in that,
lovely.
And what I loved about it was in leaving, I was like, I mean, I was so ahead of that movie. It felt like that movie was depicting her as a monster from the beginning, like that, that, that. I didn't like her. And in hearing that other people had felt so differently than me, only then was I able to understand that what this movie and Kate, who is fucking perfect, is so brilliant at, and Todd Field, is it just played the truth of every single situation, which made walking away from the movie and thinking about it in this regard sort of a Rorschach for where you're at on that question of art v. the artist creating it. And it was really, really interesting and really well done.
Well, there's also something so lovely about doing a movie about masculinity that is not about a man.
Correct.
Like, just sort of taking on like masculinity and patriarchy and power and everything that goes on there, and then hanging it not on a dude so that it is the same story we've seen 1,000 times, now just litigating are they bad or not, and was and also sort of having a film that was that enormous off of one performance. Like, the other people in the movie, wow, are great, but this is like, this is Saving Private Ryan storming Normandy,
yeah,
but just,
it's just one person,
but just Kate touching her ear.
Oh my god,
she is towering. I mean, like, the way she's a genius, it really can't be overstated. I mean, I think our greatest living actor, I think. And I say that having mentioned Meryl Streep just minutes ago. I mean, this performance is, and the thing too is, it's a very difficult, complicated performance that isn't trying to make you feel anything. It's just, she is playing the truth. And that is so important in this movie.
I feel like if there is any danger for her in award season, it is just that it is such a complex and varied performance. It's not like you're playing an unlikable character. It is such a complex and varied performance that there is just huge amounts of unlikability there.
Well, yes. I mean, she's not a good person.
Yes.
But meanwhile, Eileen Wuornos was a saint, and that's what carried Charlize over to her Oscar win.
But even a movie like that, like, sort of asks you to sympathize with her. This does not. This is just like, it's just really, and like, even the edit was interesting. Like, from the jump, it's a fascinating movie that actually demands rewatch, because Bowen, when I say it ends so bizarre,
I love
that you have to leave being like, huh?
A delicious ending that you will enjoy more than most people.
Yeah, Bowen, you're going to love it. You're going to really love it. You really are.
What makes you say this?
Because it's insane.
Okay, great. Great.
I have to say, when I was in Toronto for the Toronto International Film Festival, I pulled in every string I could to get to see The Fablemans. Oh. And I am fascinated to see what you boys, who think about and understand acting much better than I do, what you think after you see Michelle Williams' performance.
Oh my
because
God.
It was
a brutal best actress here. Brutal.
It's a truly huge thing. And I'm like, It was just that thing of, is that too huge?
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing.
It's, you know, it's going to be really interesting because, so I think the top three, and I'm going to be team Michelle on this one.
Sure,
Michelle
sure.
Yeoh, Ms. Yeoh.
Ms. Yeoh.
And because it, but it's, I haven't seen The Fablemans yet, obviously you have, but in your descriptor of it as being potentially too much and overboard, I'm wagering that we have the brutalism of Tar.
Yeah.
Versus the Spielbergian excess of The Fablemans and the emotion that carries, and the true go for broke berserk insanity that touches on kind of both of those things and everything, yes, everywhere all at once, which is really exciting. And then, like, I have not yet seen The Woman King, but I know Viola's in play for what many are saying shows new dimensions of her talent. But yeah, I mean, Tar was, I'm really, really excited for you to see it. Do you have this week off?
I'm working.
You'll go at some point.
And I'm going to my nephew's bris on Thursday.
Oh, that's so exciting.
My gosh. Is this your first bris?
It's my first bris. And for it to be family is very special. I might go to a big movie day on Friday in Atlanta while I'm there and just watch all of these films. Well, no, The Woman King, I'm sure, is playing somewhere in Atlanta.
Oh yeah, it's doing really well.
And because it's out in theaters now, right?
It is.
It's been around for a while. Like, I saw The Woman King. It's very good. It's not like, it's not a Viola Best Actress forum, though. It is like very much potentially a Best Picture.
Yeah.
But like, it just doesn't really, I mean, she gives too much space to other people. You know what I mean? I mean, she's definitely a journey, but it's also her just trying to establish, you can watch an action film about a Black woman and have it be thrilling. I mean, my signature experience is I was walking out of the theater at the Grove, and there were like 6 8th grade boys next to me, and one of them was assuring the rest of them it was a Marvel movie.
Oh my God.
I didn't understand. I actually didn't know. And this just goes to show, like, you know, how badly we need this story told, is that I did not know the Dora Milaje were actually based on these real women. I did not know that.
Yeah, it was the Royal Guard of Dahomey were all women. And also, do you know who co-wrote The Woman King?
Yes, Maria Bello.
Maria Bello.
Did you know this, Bowen? Maria Bello. Okay, Maria Bello is the bar manager in Coyote Ugly, the blonde woman. Okay.
Oh wow.
So she's like iconic lesbian actress.
Uh-huh.
And she, I guess, went a few years ago to Africa to like experience like some sort of tour.
Wait,
that like
what?
Yes, that oh she, so she saw God. where the Dahomey, like, she was just steeped in the culture and said, "There's a story here." And then and get this, the way that she pitched it was she was presenting an award to Viola at some event, and she, like, Viola came up on stage to get the award, and Maria Bello turned to her in the audience, and she was like, "I am going to take this opportunity to pitch a film that I know Viola needs to do." Pitched The Woman King to her in that moment, and they got off stage, and Viola was like, "I'm actually interested in that. We need to talk about it." And now it's a hit movie, and it's like Viola's, you know, slaying.
But Maria Bello has been like working pretty steadily, like, over the years too, as an actor.
She's a talent, but she's incredible. Also a producer.
Amazing.
She has pivoted to more producing and charity work in Africa since pivoting to lesbianism at some point in time in the 2000s.
Yes. Those go hand in hand.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need a career and sexuality reset.
And that's a real culture too. That's real culture number 30. Sometimes you need a career and sexuality
reset.
There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
Refreshing bubbles, colorful bottles, and playful smiles galore.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible, and with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
Each sip adds a burst of fun to your day.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on all my favorite shows with.
Yes, baby girl. And the resealable bottles makes them easy to take them on the go.
Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support too, keeping us feeling great all day long.
Hey, try new Bubbly Burst. Hey, everybody. During the break, let's quickly talk about a couple things that are important to most people I know. Comfort and style. Crocs classic clogs and sandals have both covered.
And when we're talking about style, we mean personal style. There's just so many colors and so many Jibbitz charms. You can dress up your Crocs to match your mood and to match your personality and to fit the occasion.
I mean, ultimately, you can stand out from the crowd in a way that only you can because it's your personal style.
And now let's talk about comfort. You know, it doesn't get better than the Crocs, clogs, and sandals when it comes to being comfortable. Style and comfort are usually a trade-off, but here they're a package deal. It's like you have cushions on your feet. Soft, stylish, personalized, colorful cushions.
So why wait? Head over to Crocs.com today and experience the comfort and style of Crocs classic clogs and sandals for yourself. Your feet will thank you.
Hey, Las Culturistas listeners, we're here to tell you that there's no reason to panic the next time you're searching for the perfect gift. Now you can use Gift Mode on Etsy.
Gift Mode on Etsy takes the stress out of gifting so you can find the perfect item for anyone and any occasion.
It's easy. Just tap or click Gift Mode on your Etsy app or Etsy.com, then answer a few short questions about who you're shopping for and what they like. And Gift Mode instantly gives you curated gift ideas based on hundreds of personas.
There's a lot of pressure around gifting. I usually have a hard time thinking of gift ideas for the birthdays of loved ones in my life. And sometimes I do get super stressed trying to find that perfect thing.
Me too. But now with Gift Mode on Etsy, I can search hundreds of gifting personas and find so many incredible items. And I actually just found a custom chalk bag for the adventurer in my life who's into rock climbing.
Not me. Now it's simple to find gifts made by independent sellers for all the people in your life. So,
Whether you need a housewarming gift for the new homeowner in your life or a birthday present for the pickleballer in your life, Gift Mode has you covered.
I'm not the pickleballer. Need to find the perfect gift? Don't panic. Try Gift Mode on Etsy now.
When the music of Celine Dion makes sweet Canadian love with the Oscar-winning film Titanic, you get Titanic, a campy, unhinged, chaotic night out.
And what more could you ask for? Find out what really happened to Jack and Rose on that fateful night from Celine Dion's totally real and historically accurate perspective.
Titanic is NYC's funniest night out. Plus, it's the winner of multiple awards, including the Las Culturistas Kimberly Akimbo Award for Best Indoor Live Performance.
Titanic is a parody musical that answers the question of what really happened to Jack and Rose on that fateful night aboard the Titanic.
My life was improved by seeing Titanic, so much so that I reached out to my best friend, Bowen Yang, to improve his life. And Bowen, did it succeed?
It succeeded so much that I went 4 more times.
So set sail with this kooky, crazy off-Broadway hit this season. Plus, if you get tickets 6 weeks in advance, you get 30% off. And that's on Titanic math, girlfriend.
But seriously, who can wait that long? Go see it tomorrow. What are you waiting for? Get tickets today at TitanicMusical.com.
And you know, speaking of career and sexuality, I've been to the theater many, many times, like over the past few weeks. And one of the most joyous times I had was to see Bros. It was really so good, guy. It was so fucking good.
So good.
Hearing you guys talk about it was very sweet. I really appreciated it. It's such a fun movie. I hope more people see it. Not enough people have seen it in the theaters. I hope people turn on their televisions and get it when they can. On the 18th or the 26th, it's coming pretty soon.
Oh, really?
Oh, great.
Yeah. They're rolling it out. But it really was fun to watch it in theaters with gays.
Yeah.
Okay. The best part was after, so I saw it like all of the times that it, like, we had openings and stuff. But my friend Marina Kochenberg, very talented television writer. She writes for Never Have I Ever. She and I go see romantic comedies together, and we went inside at the Grove. And after it was done, all of the gays in the audience felt the need to come. She went to the bathroom, and I was waiting outside of the bathroom, and everyone felt the need to come up and explain to me who they had hooked up with in the cast. And it was just a very charming little receiving line. And then Gus Kenworthy came over and said hi. And it was like, you don't need to tell us who you hooked up with.
I probably could guess.
We could guess.
But no, his long-term ex-boyfriend, Matt Wilkes.
Matt Wilkes, who's so funny.
So great.
Was that you at your most papal, you would say?
I mean, I would
just
say
receiving all these people telling you, like confessing all their misdeeds to you.
I have a very high bar for my most papal, Bowen. And like, it would be hard
title
to
that, most papal.
Assert.
Most papal.
It would be hard to assert that in front of Matt Rogers, who has had to see me, you know, issue bulls or interdicts at various points in time.
Listen.
Interdicts.
On these streets.
On these streets.
I was just thinking to myself, like, you probably had your iconic laugh. They probably were like, I mean, he's here. I have to go over there. With a laugh like that, the man wants to be papalized.
Like, I do hate situations where my obtrusive laugh makes me too present. There are moments when it's just perfect. When at the end of Joel's special recording, he was like,
I heard your laugh.
Is Guy here? That's what I want. I just want a gentle level of awareness. But then there are times when it is like, comedians who get mad at someone for laughing too loudly in the audience. I'm like, calm down. Don't you know what your job is? And like, it makes me feel self-conscious for making it about me in a very 11th grade girl kind of way. But we all want to do that sometimes.
Mm-mm.
I am going through this journey now at work where my laugh is sort of piercing in its frequency at the read-through. But sometimes...
I love your laugh.
The laugh is one thing, but now I'm doing this thing where I am literally knee or table slapping. Going, you know, like going like
Bowen
this.
Hits table. We all know Bowen hits tables.
I hit table. Mm-hmm. But now this is teetering on like it being perceived as performative. Mm-hmm. And that's my fear.
The thing is withholding joy in a comedy writing situation is perfectly useless. And there are some people who are really aggressive about it.
Useless.
And
useless.
Like, don't we know it, guy?
We need to remember what's fun about what we're doing while we're doing it. Before there's an audience here. Like when I was on Fashion Police, when I started out, they kind of didn't laugh, even at the good stuff. And I was like, what's the fucking point of being here if we're not going to enjoy
There's
it?
There's no point.
Yeah, yeah. Also, it's how you know something will work.
Yeah.
I mean, like, don't, even if you were cold hard math about this shit, like, yeah, understand that, like, we want the laughter from someone else, at least. It doesn't have to, we don't have to have fun here.
Yes.
But it's better if we totally can engage that someone might.
But when you separate those things of, like, the laughter, trying to, like, outline the audience response, the way it's being received from, like, the text itself, like, this has happened, like, 1,000 times already this season, like, on stuff that I've worked on, where it's like, oh, we're getting lost in the sauce too much. Like, let's just, like, pull out and just be like, oh, like, this works, this plays, let's move on. Like,
yeah,
it's sometimes it do be getting a little too granular.
Did you know that was actually a narrative in Bone and I's early friendship?
What do you mean?
Was that we would scream at each other at each other's shows. Scream. Like, I remember, like, I would do sketches and Bone would come to the Hammercat shows and he would be laughing screaming so hard. And I was like, that's my girl out there. And when I would go see Danger Box shows and then Bone do improv, I would be screaming to the point where people were like, yeah, you really laughed a lot. And I was like, yeah. And then I wasn't self-aware enough to be self-conscious. I was just simply too caught up in the feelings of joy.
I mean, there's nothing better than that feeling of falling in love with somebody's comic voice. There's nothing better than just sort of like,
period.
You know, one of the great things about stand-up is like constantly having these new people show up and you're just like, I just want to know what this person is going to do. Like,
you did that for us.
You did that for us, 100%.
But also, I just enjoyed so much what you did. I will never forget that I got to meet Matt through his performance. I appreciate very greatly. Bo and I just had to meet at a gay party, surrounded by gays talking about how much Bitcoin they had. Okay, so that night that I met you, there was this guy who attempted to brag to me about how much Bitcoin he had. And I was just like, fuck you. I did not say this, but my attitude was generally, I'm from Los Angeles. You should not brag to me about how rich you are. You should brag to me about your industry power or fame. And your fame should precede it.
Sure.
And then since then, all I can think about is how much Bitcoin he had. He had like,
this was like 2015. This was like a while ago.
No, he had like in the tens of thousands, I believe. Like that is, if he is held onto it, a very wealthy man now.
Sure, sure. Good for him. Good for him.
He needs to get back in touch with you. Now it seems like you might be interested in what he has to say.
It's true.
Because he might be a very wealthy person now.
I know, but
there are stealth crypto fags out there, and they're among us.
Oh, I know them.
They're really among us, and then I celebrate them.
It was very much like it was a man wearing a blazer at you know, at gay nights, and he had that feel about him, and I was just like, I'm from the West Coast, I don't know how to deal with this.
Gay nights where? Do you recall? It was in New York.
Was it called Pretty Ugly?
Yes.
Yes.
Pretty Ugly. I remember that party.
Was that at the Ace Hotel? No.
It was not, but it was...
It was like, it was in the venue of some sort of weird Tony and Tina's wedding, like interactive theater experience. And I just remember being unused to Hell's Kitchen and having dancer bodies all over the place. Anytime somebody had very visible pecs and a very visible ass underneath their clothes, I went up and asked if they were Broadway Spider-Man. And
Matt Wilkes really was.
Matt Wilkes was a Spider-Man.
Yes.
Did you know that?
Of course.
He really was Spider-Man.
No, there was one time we were at a party at Jeffrey Self's house and he was having back pain and everyone was very solicitous about like offering help. And I was like, why do they care so much? And then I was like, oh, these are injuries he sustained as Spider-Man. That's why everybody cares so much.
Wow. Like, honestly, just to be on the front lines at Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, one of the greatest theatrical wars we've seen. When Arachne swang from the ceiling,
honey,
people died.
People were killed. Nobody was killed.
I bought the book about it, but have not read it.
There's the book. What book?
Is there a
What's
book?
This book?
There's a book. There's a book. I don't
is
know.
Is there oral history?
Yeah.
Oh.
I love an oral history. Can I say? It feels like the girls can really talk shit.
Yes.
I want them to do an oral history for Fire Island so bad so everyone can know all the tea. I'm ready to spill.
Bowen, did you read the Tom Shales book, before you went to SNL?
I've never given it a full read, and I've read bits and pieces. I would like hop around to like the eras that I loved. I did like
cursory.
I did like pre-75, then like the first couple seasons, like all the way up to like the New Orleans episode, and then I went to like the 90s, and then I went to like, and then they, for the 40th, they did an update, and I assume they'll do one for the 50th too. And but okay, but this is my question, and please comment on this. I'm like, is it too, like, I would never be caught dead on the subway, like, reading a hard copy of it.
Can you imagine? Just, like, you reading, that, like, the SNL book.
Disgusting. Like, but I do think it's worth giving it, like, a full read-through, right? Is that terrible of me?
No,
I don't think so.
I love doing research. I love doing research about anything, and I feel like it's weird to start work with somebody about whom you can know a great deal and to not know a great deal about them. I feel like I dropped the ball every time I didn't. Can I tell you girls a story?
Yes,
you really can.
When we did the table read for the only other movie I have been in, No Strings Attached with Natalie Portman, I sat next to this woman and I was like, Balsam is her last name. Is this Martin Balsam's daughter? Do I not remember? And then as I was leaving, I was like, guy, that is the only other woman who's been, that's, at that time, the only person who had been married to George Clooney, Miss Talia Balsam.
Talia Balsam.
Now married to what's his name from Mad Men, John Slattery.
Yes,
and that was a situation where if I had prepared properly, I would have been able to like make her my friend within 90 seconds, and then ask her questions about being married to George Clooney, and I dropped the ball.
I have to say, I had forgotten that she is also an instrument in that great symphony of a film. Like, one of my favorite things ever is that the supporting cast of that movie is what it is.
I mean, the supporting cast of that movie is all over the place, and it's always fun to know, like, Olivia Thirlby, you and I have a thread drawn together. One time on the streets in Manhattan, Olivia Thirlby accosted me, and she was like, I know you. He was like, you're Aaron's publicist or something like that. I was like, no, we were in a movie together. She's like, no, you're not. Like, she was very certain who I was. And it was like accessory gay to someone she knows. And I was like, no, we were.
I have to stand.
Olivia Thirlby, you saw Juno and you were like, who is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where's she?
I know. She, I feel like she should be, she doing,
like, fits
more.
She fits into this mold now of like, I can see her so clearly in my mind, like in a movie now.
Yes.
It must be so rough for those people who have to have somebody else create the correct vehicle for them.
Yes.
You know what
I
mean? And there is something so nice about just being like, well, the thing that is holding me back is that I have been too lazy or unfocused to put together the thing I need to for myself.
Period.
I mean, literally the daily struggle. But wait, what, this iconic Matt and Bowen moment brings me to someone who is finally getting a moment. Bowen took me years ago to go see the film Thoroughbreds, and it starred Anya Taylor-Joy, who, of course, you know, popped all the way off. And the other actress was Olivia Cooke, who I thought was as good. Mm-hmm. I was like, the girl gives a stunning performance. And I have been waiting for years for her to find that. And now she is, I guess, in the Dragon show. She's full on in the House of the Dragon. And she's, of course, going viral right now for that Negroni Spagliato with Prosecco. Stunning. That's her. She's stunning. And I was like, wow, for this to be not the Dragon show, but for this meme to be your vehicle to great success, you go, girl.
Am I missing something? Is it just popping off because they said it sexy or something?
I think that's kind of what it is.
I mean, Negroni. Rich bisexual energy of maybe a sort that it eludes me.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, now it's the drink of the fall. Oh, I don't fucking know.
Although bartenders are slamming their absolute head into the wall because they don't want to make that.
This is the cycle now of like conventional, like seasonally conventional cocktails where it's like, well, everyone's ordering espresso martinis. Everyone's ordering like Dirty Shirley's. Everyone's ordering Aperols. Like it's...
Trends are going to shift. You have to deal with the waves that come at you, bartenders.
I want to recommend both of you reading material if you want.
Yes.
I'm reading this book now. I'm reading this book now. You actually would both love this. It's by this guy named W. David Marks, I think. But the book is just called Status and Culture. And it basically writes about how, like, the reason why trend cycles are so quick now is because status is broken down, and like people who have high status aren't respected as much as they used to, and people with low status kind of have the pseudo high status. Like, so it's all mixed up.
Oh, and the show that I just sold to ABC is about...
Congratulations.
Thank you. What a terrible wreck. But it's about three families with the same income who have different classes. And just the fact that we don't talk about the way that class is not just a factor of how much money you make, but truly, like, how metal is your straw and how, you know, orange is your cocktail and shit like that. So that actually sounds like perfect reading material for me right now. Responsible research.
It's interesting. It's a very great book that pertains to things that we think about. Anyway, Olivia.
But no, to pivot back to Tar.
Okay.
Like, one of the things that was amazing about Tar was like re-rooting yourself in this very Manhattan world of people who are so certain that they have control of the culture. And it is such like an abstruse and rarefied and weird world that like most people don't care about.
Yes.
But still, you know, the people in control still get down on their knees and suck the dick of Lydia Tarr, Petra's father.
Yes, Petra's father. There's a scene, Bowen, where it's not a spoiler, but she finds out her daughter is being bullied at school. And she shows up and goes over to this truly 8-year-old girl and is like shoos the other girls away that are standing with her having a conversation. And she kind of gets down on her level and she says, I'm Petra's father. And she basically says to her, if you ever mess with my daughter again, I'm going to get you. And if you tell any adults, they will not believe you. So which you can do if you want. But I'm just telling you, it has to stop or I'm going to get you. And no one will believe you because I'm an adult. And the little girl goes away.
Wow.
But it's iconic. And her performance is so, again, just like so fearsome, but controlled.
Yeah.
This, what I was pulling from what you were saying, Guy, was I think that the more I work in this industry, the more I realize that these people that have been lifted up and put on pedestals, like there's always an ass to show at some point. And what I love about Cate Blanchett's performance in Tar is it is the best performance of a douchebag I have ever seen.
Yes. Wow.
She is such a douche. And you start watching it and you think because of the way the movie is presenting itself and the way that she presents herself in the film and the way that the film is sort of, you know, presenting her, you think, oh, this must be something I should take seriously. This must be like a stark drama about whatever's going on here. And then you realize it's actually very explicitly a satire.
It is a laugh out loud pop.
And it's hilarious.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Is it sort of like, by the end of the movie, you're like, oh, who the fuck cares that she's this conductor? Or no?
I mean, the thing is, what's beautiful about it is like, she's a genius. And there's never a moment that you question she's a genius, but there are so many moments where you think about the ways that politics and ruthlessness and talent and hard work, the way, like, what makes a genius? Like, it really is a what makes a genius. And so frequently when we ask that question, it's like, well, I guess we have to put up with what Mozart is doing because he gives us this music. And this is not, like, this is a movie that, like, is not saying, oh, well, we have to put up with it. He's so good at what he does. And we shouldn't be talking about it because you should be able to experience it.
Okay. Oh, but this is so interesting to me. This is so interesting to me because I keep running into this thing where, like, people don't ultimately give a shit about what I do. I don't give a shit about what other people do who get mad at the stuff that I'm sort of talking around a lot of things, but, like, so the other thing the book talks about is like status groups and there are different conventions among different status groups and that there are different markers of status in those groups and different hierarchies within those. Anyway, is this something that's sort of percolating in the film?
I think so. I think the fact that you are actually reading this is going to lend itself to a very interesting read on the movie. Because it's also a lot about the packaging and presentation of genius. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like this sort of agreed upon fact that this character Lydia Tarr is basically, she's like the closest thing to Mozart since Mozart. I mean, like, she breathes art. And knowing that about herself and knowing that she has to maintain that, there comes with that, like, of course, the douchebaggery I'm talking about, that has to happen whenever you're talking about your own accomplishments. But it's just such an incredible study of someone who has bought their own hype to the point where they actually have forgotten who they are at all. And people don't matter to her because she's not a grounded, emotional human being. Like, there's one relationship in her life is not transactional, which is actually a line that's said to her by her wife. She's like, you've got one relationship in your life that isn't transactional, and that's the one with your daughter. But then I also think that that relationship is transactional in many ways. So it's a very interesting
thing. Can I hear that argument from you? Because there was a journalist who quoted that as though it were her own. There's one relationship in her life that isn't transactional. And I'm like, that's in the movie. And also anything that's stated to you in a movie, you should question. But I want to hear your... like,
my opinion on her is that, and you see this in at the end of the movie, I think she's obviously, she's a disgusting person. She's incredibly talented. And I think that she, like any predator, the number one thing she covets is control.
Yeah.
And I think that she wants to dominate. And I think that obviously, you know, we don't get into her backstory a ton, but we see enough that she's obviously very ashamed of maybe a certain segment of her life. I'm not saying too much. But the thing is, like, what I felt in that scene, which is obviously sort of the relationship she has with her daughter is summed up in this scene with the child when she goes and intimidates the bully at school, is this is another way she can get off on being a dominator.
Yeah.
So it's less about protecting her daughter and more about being able to enter a space and let someone know that if she wanted to, she could ruin your life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that that also comes into play at the end of the film when you see, you know, where she ends up.
Yeah.
Because while that atmosphere is so insane and surreal to behold, and you leave the movie thinking, what the fuck? It is still an environment that she can dominate.
Yeah.
And that ultimately is the number one most important thing to her. No matter how much she justifies to herself that it's about art, it's actually about dominance. I'm sure she loves music. Yeah. I'm sure that she loves what she does. And she's incredibly talented at it. But it is very clear to me that this person is a classic capital P predator, because what they want most of all is to be
the
de facto dominator of any circumstance.
There's the way that you see people. We see people around us who seek fame to some extent so that they can stop being people. They sort of want to stop being people. And there's that weird way that, like, watching Lydia Tarr try to compose in a room on her own with no one telling her how great she is, she has so little capacity to figure out what she should be composing. And the thing is like, I think that this is a truth. It's so hard for people who are successful to get off of their own bullshit enough to keep making things. And when I see the people who do that, I am always really impressed. You know, the people who...
Yeah. Well, when there is eyes on you, I think that I think like it's so true too. It's like, even if you're the most creative person ever and you're a prolific person, when there are eyes on you, like the way that you create work just changes. Yeah. I mean, like when you're fucking around in a basement when we met you, it's harder to create with people watching. It just is. It's interesting to see it play out in this movie because it's not just that people are watching, which she seems comfortable with. It's that she has to think about the way she may be responsible to a certain situation, and she cannot get out of her own way.
Yeah.
And I do think that what's interesting about that is watching that converge with the idea of creating art.
Yeah.
And whether or not even fucking matters, you know, because ultimately it doesn't. It doesn't fucking matter at the end of the movie that she's a genius. Yeah. That's why we almost never hear any of her work. It doesn't fucking matter. This is about an individual who's...
Here's something, and I say this as someone who's not seen the movie, so this is probably total bullshit.
Oh my god, I'm like edging for you to see it.
The opposite of creation or creativity is control. Because if you're creating something, you're sort of putting it out into the world, and if you're controlling something, you're just sort of exerting yourself on something that's already there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
true. And like, once you have status, part of you is always going to be conservative to try to control and maintain that status.
Yes,
and you're not going to be able to make those same kinds of risks. It's why I always try to, when Twitter becomes like unrepentant shit talking, I always try so hard to remind myself how much I would be shit talking to be funny in the same way if I were 20.
Yeah, you know,
like, I just think there is that feeling of like striking out from powerlessness does have a great deal of creative chaotic energy to it.
Yep.
And I have to respect that while at the same time being almost constantly annoyed by it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we all are participating in what we're in the atmosphere that we're given to participate.
Yeah.
I think about that all the time. It's just like, you know, to go from snarky faggots online to
faggots who are snarked at.
Oh, people actually sometimes give us the opportunity to do this and then to be faggots that are snarked at. We deserve it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Ultimately, it's also like you can't get too mad because, you know, but it's just, it's a really, really, really fascinating, interesting movie. And I also think like if people were listening to this episode in like a bubble and like didn't understand like much about the movie, this might sound like a snobby film, like, or like the way we're talking about it. It's really not. It's so like when I realized it was a comedy, I felt like I felt free. And I feel like the fact that they're kind of withholding that that's what it is really genius and smart.
Well, and it is one of those things where if you were somebody like Matt Whitaker, who cares too much about classical music, will be able to enjoy and get jokes in that movie that don't make sense to me. But I almost think that watching it as an outsider is more fun because it is this like contained space of a world that like I know nothing about. And it's not about that world. It's just about the power dynamics that inhabit any world.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I also left the movie being like, okay, like when I didn't like it, which was my reality for about, again, like probably 6 to 7 hours. I was like, well, fuck that. I thought, well, I'll tell you what's not brilliant. The idea of like a conductor who like manipulates, you know, time and sound, also like that one-to-one being
sure.
Oh, she's a manipulator of people too. Like that is not brilliant. It is not genius. And I was like, I don't like this. But what is brilliant and genius is someone who genuinely believes that they are manipulating time, sound, energy, and the feeling and temperature of a room, thinking they can get away with other stuff to this extent. The belief, the character study is interesting. And that's all it is.
Mm.
It reminded me a little bit of The Tempest in just being a character study of somebody whose power has gone to their head. At the end of The Fabelmans, I was like so fascinated by all of these choices that Spielberg had made. But I was not swept away. And Tar completely swept me away.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
Refreshing bubbles, colorful bottles, and playful smiles galore.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible, and with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
Each sip adds a burst of fun to your day.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on all my favorite shows with.
Yes, baby girl. And the resealable bottles makes them easy to take them on the go.
Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support too, keeping us feeling great all day long.
Hey, try new Bubbly Burst. Hey, everybody. During the break, let's quickly talk about a couple things that are important to most people I know. Comfort and style. Crocs classic clogs and sandals have both covered.
And when we're talking about style, we mean personal style. There's just so many colors and so many Jibbitz charms. You can dress up your Crocs to match your mood and to match your personality and to fit the occasion.
I mean, ultimately, you can stand out from the crowd in a way that only you can because it's your personal style.
And now let's talk about comfort. You know, it doesn't get better than the Crocs, clogs, and sandals when it comes to being comfortable. Style and comfort are usually a trade-off, but here they're a package deal. It's like you have cushions on your feet. Soft, stylish, personalized, colorful cushions.
So why wait? Head over to Crocs.com today and experience the comfort and style of Crocs classic clogs and sandals for yourself. Your feet will thank you.
When the music of Celine Dion makes sweet Canadian love with the Oscar-winning film Titanic, you get Titanic, a campy, unhinged, chaotic night out.
And what more could you ask for? Find out what really happened to Jack and Rose on that fateful night from Celine Dion's totally real and historically accurate perspective.
Titanic is NYC's funniest night out. Plus, it's the winner of multiple awards, including the Las Culturistas Kimberly Akimbo Award for Best Indoor Live Performance.
Titanic is a parody musical that answers the question of what really happened to Jack and Rose on that fateful night aboard the Titanic.
My life was improved by seeing Titanic, so much so that I reached out to my best friend, Bowen Yang, to improve his life. And Bowen, did it succeed?
It succeeded so much that I went 4 more times.
So set sail with this kooky, crazy off-Broadway hit this season. Plus, if you get tickets 6 weeks in advance, you get 30% off. And that's on Titanic math, girlfriend.
But seriously, who can wait that long? Go see it tomorrow. What are you waiting for? Get tickets today at TitanicMusical.com.
Hey, it's Bowen, and I want to introduce you to the new Cantina Chicken Menu at Taco Bell. Yes, it's an all-new chicken menu with fresh new ingredients, great as a lunchtime option. Taste for yourself the slow-roasted chicken, pico de gallo, purple cabbage, and new avocado verde salsa sauce. With new menu options like Cantina Chicken Tacos, burritos, and quesadillas, there's something for everyone. And Taco Bell isn't just for a late night. With this new Cantina Chicken Menu, the possibilities are, well, endless. Try the new Cantina Chicken Menu at Taco Bell now. Now, I said.
How was your tip? Talk about Toronto.
Okay, when I was getting to go to the Toronto International Film Festival, there are stories around that I will tell you boys when it is not being recorded. But
okay.
Oh, is it Don't Worry Darling stuff? Because I'm gagged.
No, it's not. I didn't realize that Don't Worry Darling was happening. And then they were just like screaming children all over the place. And it was very exciting.
Oh.
But the magical story is just that there is a venerable Canadian political writer who is married to Canada's former governor general. And I asked them to go with me to the premiere. And they were like, we can't, but you should come over to the house and like have tea with us. And so I went over to John Ralston Saul and Adrian Clarkson's house 2 days after the Queen died. And had these people who would like, you know, spent many a night at one of the Queen's houses, had hung out with the Queen many times, just sort of analyzing what that meant for the future of Canada. And that was my tiff right there.
I forgot the proximity of tiff. You being in tiff, you being at tiff in Toronto on Canadian soil, the Commonwealth. And I feel like, wow, this
also,
is...
Also, got full Scott Thompson, like... The icon.
What do you mean? He was there. Oh, my, wait.
He and Joel came to the Bros premiere.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Oh, Scott Thompson was there.
Like, I talked to Scott way too much. And then I ended up being in Boys Town, and he was at a birthday party that was at the bar next door. And we ended up hanging out all day long. And then I came home and turned on the news, and he was on CBC. Processing the death of the Queen for
Oh my god.
It was just I had always said when the Queen dies, I will take the day off work. Like when the Queen dies, I will need to take the day off work. But I did not take the day off of PAX. Jen Statsky was very open that it was a possibility, but I powered through. I, you know, kept calm and carried on. It was just with all of the meaning that she has for billions of people around the planet, it was just sort of a change of an era and getting to be somewhere where they were really taking it seriously in a lot of different ways meant a lot to me.
I'm disappointed that you didn't keep your promise to yourself.
You should have taken the day off, guy.
I mean, yes, it's like out of respect, but truly, I did miss an hour of work to talk to John Ralston Saul about what he thinks for the future of the Canadian monarchy.
And what does he think? Are you comfortable sharing? Thoughts?
Oh, I cannot repeat those on anything that is broadcastable.
So it wasn't positive.
Is it a collapse of meaning? And so therefore the Canadians will fully go crazy and nihilist?
He had a vision. He had a vision of a future that was more wholly Canadian. And I really like it was fascinating to hear from just like this very, very venerable political philosopher about what it means. And it was super fun.
Now, let me ask you something, and this is going to be more emotional. Did you cry? Did you shed tears?
Uh-huh. 100%. I was like, I knew that when the Queen died, I would cry. And the thing is, I don't by that mean to imply that I think that the British monarchy is good has not been a terribly, terribly destructive thing. I just think that a stable icon of my childhood, you know, not like my dad was great and terrible in lots of ways. I cry about him being dead. This person who represented stability and sort of one thing, I think when you are a too bright faggot growing up in the United States, seeing, and also in sort of like, an anti-intellectual farm town, thinking about like Britain and its tradition seems very, very fancy. And then you are exposed to them directly and you're like, who do these people think they are? and so it was, if anything, crying for lost innocence.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you think that Imelda Staunton is going to tear?
Okay, I have no problem with Imelda Staunton. And
a lot of people do. You know who hates Imelda
Staunton? That's so funny.
Cola Scola convinced me to loathe Imelda Staunton. And so now,
but why? What does she do?
I don't know. I mean, the thing is like, and
she was a B-plus Rose in Gypsy, we can say.
Yeah, I think that's Cole's main gripe.
Yes,
maybe you're right.
And the thing is like, I learned of her as one of the lovies, as one of Emma Thompson's close personal friends from Footlights who hung out and made things together. And I was just like, she's one of the cool people. And then I was just like, oh, God, she is a little much. Like, she can be a little much. And we had been promised, Chris Schleicher came back with the tea like 6 years ago that Peter Morgan was asking
Dame Helen Mirren
to come back. And, you know, I feel a little bit as though I did not get the two seasons of Dame Helen Mirren I wanted. I'm very excited for Leslie Manville. I'm very excited.
Oh,
for
Leslie Manville will be wonderful.
Everything that's coming for us. I mean, The Crown has
and Ms. Dubicki is gonna, she's really good. And I'm so fucking dumb with Diana stories, I have to say. Like, truly, I don't think so, honey. One more Diana story, but I do feel like this will be the last one for a while because we have the bubble has truly burst.
It's burst in a big way.
Lewis's joke about how we're only 6 or 7 movies away from really understanding Marilyn Monroe is one of the best jokes of 2022. What the fuck are we doing?
Have either of you endeavored to try and watch that film?
No.
I refuse.
I don't care. I didn't watch the Michelle Williams one, and I would probably like that.
I did like that one.
See?
I do love her. You know, we were watching last night at the pregame, we were watching videos of Gwen Verdon dancing.
And then watching Michelle do it?
We didn't, but it made me realize, like, God damn it. That performance was incredible.
There is a surprising amount of Gwen Verdon in her Mitzi Fadelman. And you're like, that doesn't make any sense. But I would, okay, here's before you see the Fablemans, I would encourage you to look at a still photo of Leah Spielberg. And when you just realize the French Bob is ripped from the headlines, like you can understand more that this performance is rooted in a specific human being. And it is amazing. But it's also one of those things when it comes to Best Actress race, she is like, 40% of that movie, like it's not something like what Michelle Yeoh, like Lydia Tarr is the entirety of a film, maybe that like with some great supporting roles, but like I just feel like Michelle Yeoh got written the most gigantic role imaginable, and she fucking did it every step of the way, and I hope and pray that the Academy can give an award to like a movie that came out in like August or before that.
April.
Yeah, it was way early in the year. Yeah.
And somebody who is playing like a lady who owns a laundry. Like if they can open up their minds enough for that.
In a funny action movie. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it was just everything everywhere all at once. Like it was. Yeah.
It truly was, guys.
Enormous.
Thank you for saying that, and for really putting
the title into the movie seamlessly.
And look at the way we're looking at you with pride and respect. And can I say, my rubric is usually, could no one else have done it? Literally,
no one else.
There is not a human being on the planet that could have done
it. Except Jackie Chan, because that's who it was written for originally.
And even that would have been like low impact in comparison.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Which it's so much more interesting with
it's
her.
So much with more with interesting her, yes. with her. Yeah.
And also the thing though is like I thought that would be like objectively true at the end of the year that this would be the definitive thing that lives up to that rubric. I was like, I mean, Michelle Yeoh and Everything Everywhere All at Once, like hand her the award.
But now Kate,
I don't know that there's someone that could have played Lydia Tarr like
the
this.
Thing,
I don't
the
know.
The thing is here we start getting into economics of Academy Awards. And it is just that question of determining who is worth three. And we have, in the last 10 or 15 years, we have opened up who is worth three. And I think we all know that... Kate is worth three, but I don't know that it's now. I feel like, you know, like Blue Jasmine was 9 years ago. And like, it is huge. I used to say this. I was so excited for my mom and Olivia to watch Everything Everywhere All at Once, because you have blue collar, like working class lady who gets to explore everything that was possible for her. Mm-hmm. And then you have like daughter who is in pitched battle with her at all times, mm-hmm. who is queer and weird and all of those things. And my mom fell asleep during it because she falls asleep during things all the time, but just sort of Olivia got the full experience of it. And it was just like, it's just so wonderful when you see something like that. And it's not just a thing of beauty, but also something that, you know, will mean something to people who matter to you. Everything Everywhere All at Once has that warmth factor that Tar doesn't, you know? Yeah.
Makes it go the distance. Yeah, for sure.
It's got more of Coda than Tar does.
But being able to wrap my head around the fact that we live in a world now where Coda wins Best Picture. Like, not that it wasn't a great and lovely movie, but it is just like a very streamable film on Amazon that Apple. You watch on your television or whatever, Apple, has more potential than something that is blowing up planets.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, Coda was a sweet and lovely movie, but it was not Power of the Dog. But then I saw you sort of drag Power of the Dog. Power of the Dog on Twitter. You did.
The thing is I love Power of the Dog. I will drag it. Like, the best thing about Power of the Dog is my friend Sarah Thayer made me go see it in a theater in Pasadena, same theater where I saw Everything Everywhere All at Once. But having to drag yourself through the boredom to realize what it was doing made it one of the most effective portrayals of what closetedness is. Like, I felt that it was really good. I thought that it was a rich movie that I thought about a lot, but I also was a little bit like, what does this movie want? What does this movie have to say? Like, it a little bit fell into, there's a correct kind of gayness that will happen off screen that we will never see, but is correct gayness. And then there is this bad gayness that is bad, mm-hmm. but we're going to pay a lot of attention to it. It is a problem that I found most significant. Have either of you seen The Inheritance?
Yes, I've seen The Inheritance. I did the full sit through for both parts.
No, for me, life is too short.
I mean, it's true. Like, I would truly adore to take you, Matt.
I'll be sleeping like Deborah. I'll tell
you
that.
Yes. I mean, the thing is like, I have threatened to take Luke McFarlane from Bros to watch The Inheritance.
Luke would like it.
Luke would like it, but then I would yell at him so much about how angry I am at so many aspects of it. But I feel The Inheritance was something that was like, there's good, correct gayness. We're not going to show you that.
I agree.
We're going to show you drugs and fucking, and we're going to say that's bad. And I think
they did say that's bad. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Right?
And I think if we love drugs and fucking,
so fabulous.
Why not be able to explore drugs and fucking without needing to shake our finger at it? Or if you think there is some better and more correct way of being gay, show us that. And also, at the end of the day, I think rooting the validity of gay masculinity on our capacity to have children is misguided. Like,
1,000%.
You know, we are perfectly capable of being wonderful parents. Lots of people are. I'm in fucking Yuba City because I came for Parents Weekend at Davis, because a young woman had to be prodded to go to services at Hillel. But like, what I have to offer this world is not just my capacity to parents. That, like, yes, we are more than that. So I have a lot of issues with The Inheritance, but I love that it's so long.
I mean, that what you said about Power of the Dog, about like needing to sit through the boredom to understand what gold you're being given, is a little bit Tar too.
Yes.
Because it's like every single scene is there for a reason, but you don't understand why until later. Like when I hated the movie for that period of time, I was like, what the fuck is going on and why are we seeing this? And I asked it so many times, and then every time I revisited every scene, I was like, nope, we needed that. I needed that.
Going back through it and just thinking about it as a screenplay would be fascinating, and is something that I need to do. Even just the thing of like telling us so much about her work in Peru. Like, what?
I was laughing. I realized, when there's a scene in the beginning where they're doing like an interview with her. Like, she's being, again, interviewed about what a genius she is. And like, they list her credits. And at a certain point, you're like, oh, this has to be satire, because her list of credits is so long. And the fact that she's an EGOT.
She's Lydia Tarr's EGOT.
She's Lydia Tarr's EGOT. And when they said EGOT, that's when I was like, no, this is a funny movie.
Composers are the people most likely to be EGOTs.
That's okay. That's
this
fair,
is
that's
true.
Fair.
Okay, I have to ask you a question. I have to ask you boys a very serious question. It is this: is Don't Worry, Darling, camp? Because
no.
Okay, please tell me. Talk to me.
Well, have you seen Don't Worry, Darling yet, Bo?
Of course, of course. Sorry.
Oh, no, Guy has. I have it. I'm willing to. I'm going to presume that it does not achieve like the Sontagian camp definition, that it needs to be aware of its own bad taste.
Correct. Don't Worry, Darling takes itself so seriously as the half movie that it is, because it really has something interesting there that's like beyond the scope of what the script allows it to deliver. There could be something really interesting said and done as a thriller and as a fun popcorn movie that stars Harry Styles. Mm-hmm. But the movie is so obsessed with itself as a satire that it really... It sits in its own quiet and doesn't understand that it's quiet because nothing is happening. It's not quiet because we're waiting for something. And if we are, like, it never happens. But it's not a very smart movie. And that is unfortunate, because I think with a couple more passes of the script, it could have gone somewhere really fun. But it ultimately is like, you know, and this is actually, you know, saying a lot, because Stepford Wives is not an A+, but it's a C- Stepford Wives.
Of course, you've seen the Paul Rudnick, Nicole Kidman Stepford Wives, right?
I have.
It's a cum dump.
Definitely a B-, but an A+ of B-, in my opinion.
What, guys? We're getting lost in the letter grade.
I'm sorry. I would like to make one point. I while watching Don't Worry, Darling, I asked myself, is this camp in the scene when Harry is dancing and she is melting down in the bathroom? And there were like many images of her in bathroom mirrors. And I was like, maybe this is camp. And then while watching Tar without pretty pink dresses or Harry Styles dancing manages to use bathroom mirrors to be so much more camp than Don't Worry, Darling could ever hope to be.
Oh, interesting.
Don't Worry, Darling is camp in the way the Met Gala thought it was camp that year.
Right.
Wow.
That's how Don't Worry, Darling is camp. Don't Worry, Darling is showing up being like, aren't I interesting? And you're like, no, hun, and we shouldn't be doing this. But honestly, thank God for that press cycle, because I genuinely think it got butts in seats.
Yeah. No, it was like good for them. That meta narrative was better than the narrative.
Oh, like, certainly much more interesting was what was happening off screen, which maybe they knew and they leaned into it. But also, I don't know.
The day of Chris Pine spit was just, amazing.
It was psychotic.
That jumped the shark for me.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. When we were wondering, did a man spit on each other in this video? I don't know. That to me was a little too BuzzFeed for me. Listen, Guy, I want to ask you something.
Yes.
So you've had many workplace daughters.
Yes.
Chris Schleicher was your workplace daughter. I was your workplace daughter. Do you have this sort of relationship with Pat Regan?
Oh my God.
Does he allow you to mother him?
I prefer the term niece, and yes.
Oh yeah, you're my niece.
It's lovely working with Pat. We didn't know each other very well, but before I started the job, I like called him and was like, what should I know about it? He said that he liked all types of chocolate when I was talking about modeling chocolate. And so I sent him a pound of modeling chocolate to see if he would actually eat it. And he was like, over the course of 3 days, it reminded me of Dunkaroo's chocolate.
I never liked that.
Yes. I mean, the thing is like Hacks is actually filled with wonderful nieces. There's the delightful Ariel. Andrew Law is a peer. He's higher ranking than me on the show. He could never be my niece. But Ariel Carlin, who reminds me so much of my actual niece.
Ariel's wonderful.
And then Ariel. There is a delightful woman named Samantha Riley, who is from Berkeley. And, you know, that's a good time. But yes, when news about someone hot comes up, or I want to talk about the weirdness of the time at which we are taking a phone break, my niece, Pat Regan, is the person to whom I address that.
You know, I always, for some reason.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to say, Pat is in the Dominican Republic doing an Atlantis event this week. And I did not know how she takes sun. Like, she really is turning into, like, you know, a Czech porn twink over the age of 30. And yeah, she looks really good. Impressed. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Pat is good in the sun for sure. Yes,
bury that.
I was going to say, I always remember there was a moment when you two, when Matt was your niece.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We've been nieces on two shows.
Niece. Yeah. Matt will always be my niece.
Matt will always be niece. Matt and Olivia are sharing a room in the house at Davis.
Yeah.
For some reason, I always think of that the coffee break in that room for you guys was like 3 p.m. And I always just because I just picture the both of you like double, like two.
Well, that's because the room went too long.
Two hands on one cup. Two hands on just sipping your coffees, chatting, catching up, talking about the weekend.
I love it.
Fills me with joy.
And you always were very encouraging. And I always felt like very respected by you whenever we worked together. And that made me feel good because I don't respect anyone more.
You're so funny. And also the first show we worked on, there were no higher levels except for me.
There were not.
And watching you and Alice Jew like behave like adults, pitch like adults. And everyone there was really funny, but like you guys came at it so hard with such strength that I really just earned undying respect for you guys. And you behaved like co-executive producers. And I was like, those are people who are going to have fine careers.
Well, that's very nice. And Alice is fucking Alice kicking ass.
Oh my God. Everyone remember the name.
Yeah.
This season on Hacks, I did pitch a character who was the first Asian female president of the Harvard Lampoon and was a working model who only wore black. Alice is not a working model, but I tried to have an Alice Jew based character, and Paul Downs was immediately like, should we just call her Alice Jew? And I was like, all right, you're staying true.
Oh my God.
I love that. Alice is one of the most iconic people, like just in behavior, because
She's truly Daria.
She's Daria. It is Silent Assassin. Also, I'll never forget her. I hope she's not mad that I say this, but Mama did not enjoy Harry Potter and the Forbidden Journey and Universal Studios Hollywood. It did not go good. It upset her stomach.
Oh no.
But we had a fabulous day there.
Alice Jew fucking rocks. I love her so much.
She fucking rocks. I mean, like, just Bowen said it right. Remember the name. Listen, we're sort of soaring into I don't think so, honey territory. But is there anything that you, because I feel like the fact that you, like, we're without, like, your weekly, Pop Rocket is sorely missed. Let's just say that.
Very, very much so.
What do you have to say that you feel has not been said about the culture?
Oh.
And this is separate from I don't think so, honey. I just want to give you the floor.
That's so sweet. I would say getting to truly like vent and open my heart about Tar was really what I was looking for. I mean, the things I have wanted most after I saw The Fabelmans, I just wanted to have a long talk about The Fabelmans. And then a week later, I quartered Judd Apatow and made him talk to me about The Fabelmans. And then after I got out of Tar, I was just like, I listened to every podcast I could talking about Tar. And I was just like, I want to speak about and process Tar. But I would say the one thing I want people to know about in the popular culture, I will be expressing in my I Don't Think So, Honey.
Oh my God, what a segue.
There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
Refreshing bubbles, colorful bottles, and playful smiles galore.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible, and with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
Each sip adds a burst of fun to your day.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on all my favorite shows with.
Yes, baby girl. And the resealable bottles makes them easy to take them on the go.
Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support too, keeping us feeling great all day long.
Hey, try new Bubbly Burst. Hey, everybody. During the break, let's quickly talk about a couple things that are important to most people I know. Comfort and style. Crocs classic clogs and sandals have both covered.
And when we're talking about style, we mean personal style. There's just so many colors and so many Jibbitz charms. You can dress up your Crocs to match your mood and to match your personality and to fit the occasion.
I mean, ultimately, you can stand out from the crowd in a way that only you can because it's your personal style.
And now let's talk about comfort. You know, it doesn't get better than the Crocs clogs and sandals when it comes to being comfortable. Style and comfort are usually a trade-off, but here they're a package deal. It's like you have cushions on your feet. Soft, stylish, personalized, colorful cushions.
So why wait? Head over to Crocs.com today and experience the comfort and style of Crocs classic clogs and sandals for yourself. Your feet will thank you.
When the music of Celine Dion makes sweet Canadian love with the Oscar-winning film Titanic, you get Titanic, a campy, unhinged, chaotic night out.
And what more could you ask for? Find out what really happened to Jack and Rose on that fateful night from Celine Dion's totally real and historically accurate perspective.
Titanic is NYC's funniest night out. Plus, it's the winner of multiple awards, including the Las Culturistas Kimberly Akimbo Award for Best Indoor Live Performance.
Titanic is a parody musical that answers the question of what really happened to Jack and Rose on that fateful night aboard the Titanic.
My life was improved by seeing Titanic, so much so that I reached out to my best friend, Bowen Yang, to improve his life. And Bowen, did it succeed?
It succeeded so much that I went 4 more times.
So set sail with this kooky, crazy off-Broadway hit this season. Plus, if you get tickets 6 weeks in advance, you get 30% off. And that's on Titanic math, girlfriend.
But seriously, who can wait that long? Go see it tomorrow. What are you waiting for? Get tickets today at TitanicMusical.com.
Hey, it's Bowen, and I want to introduce you to the new Cantina Chicken Menu at Taco Bell. Yes, it's an all-new chicken menu with fresh new ingredients, great as a lunchtime option. Taste for yourself the slow-roasted chicken, pico de gallo, purple cabbage, and new avocado verde salsa sauce. With new menu options like Cantina Chicken Tacos, burritos, and quesadillas, there's something for everyone. And Taco Bell isn't just for a late night. With this new Cantina Chicken Menu, the possibilities are, well, endless. Try the new Cantina Chicken Menu at Taco Bell now. Now, I said.
So, Bowen, what do you say? Are we ready to thrust into this new arena of the episode?
So, this is, I don't think so, honey. This is our 1 minute segment in which we each take a minute to rail against something in the culture. Matt, do you want to go first?
Watching you like be dissatisfied with the way you just did that, because like, Bowen said it's a 1 minute segment that we each take 1 minute, and then you'll never see this at home, but Bowen literally like half-heartedly threw his hand up and rolled his eyes at the fact that he said 1 minute too close together in proximity in the sentence. And that's why we love Bowen Yang. It is the attention to detail.
It's a Sunday and I was doing music video math in the edit room all day yesterday at work, and I'm my brain is toast. I'm so sorry.
Well, that sounds like really fun math. I'll say music video math.
It is. It's kind of stressful math, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Music video math is stressful math. Shout out to Ryan Spears and Mike Diva for being champs in the room.
I didn't. I love Ryan. And
Ryan Spears.
We've known him for a very long time.
We've known him
quickly,
for a very long
how
time.
How was Megan? She seemed really
oh,
fun.
Oh, my God. Just a pure star. Super mega star. Capital 100%. S. Walks in the room. Is so warm and yet also has that effect and that quality of like sucking the air out. Like you, she walks in the room and everybody pays attention. Even people who like Josh and Aaron were talking about this, like on set for fucking Identical Twins, like she'd walk, like she came on and then like crew people who had no idea who she was like, they were like, who is that?
Who is that?
Like,
yeah.
Who is that person? And she was so, the best thing a host can say going into SNL and that Monday meeting is, I'm down for anything.
Yeah,
some hosts come in and there's nothing fundamentally wrong with this. Some hosts come in and they go, I want to do like an Irish accent. I want to do a this. I have a this impression. I have a that. Lovely. It's there's some directionality there. But the best thing that can happen is a host coming in going, I'll do anything. And then they asked her, can you sing? And she goes, not really well, but I'll do it. Mm-hmm. I'll do whatever. Like that's the best. And I disagree with that. She can sing. But was so lovely all week. And
she looks absolutely amazing too.
This is public knowledge. 7 p.m. on Friday, she finds out that her house in L.A. was broken into.
Oh, no. And I didn't know that.
And that burglars like stole like $300,000 and stuff.
Oh, no. And it's crazy in L.A. like that. It's a pretty big problem.
It's a big problem. This lady who we all love, let's let her catch a break. She literally tweeted, like, she was like, this is what happened. My house got broken into.
Ugh.
I have to be honest with y'all, like after SNL, like I need to take a break because this is just so emotionally and physically like so draining. And so,
yeah. Owen, do you suspect Alexis Nyers?
I'm not Alexis Nyers specifically, but it is giving blingering, and it just feels, I don't know. But the nefarious thing is they were like, oh, she's in New York for SNL. Let's go to her house. You know, like, yeah, let's case the joint and then rob the place a day later or something, you know? Oh,
she got deleted.
She got deleted. Anyway, she was lovely.
I find that, like, she's been through so much shit, and the stuff that she's been through often gets, like, minimized because, like,
the Tory Lanez stuff is crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It is.
Anyway, but she was phenomenal. Yeah. Everyone fell in love with her. God, so fun. And sorry, not to be like this, but like watching her in the booth, like just like kind of like on the track, like recording, I was like, this is incredible. Like she just,
oh, that must have been really cool to watch.
It was, I mean, it was cool and wobble to just watch her, and then cool and another Celestia and I were like, oh my God, she's like saying stuff that we wrote. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But she's just phenomenal. Anyway, the fact that she like put on a show on Saturday after going through an insane like life thing that she had to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As Lea Michele as Fanny Bryce said, let's give him hell, Bryce. We'll cry a little later. Well, Bryce, that's life in the theater. And
amazing.
We are going to move on to I Don't Think So, Honey, now that I've said that.
Matt, are you ready?
I am.
This is Matt Rogers. I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I don't think so, honey, that we have to wait still for Midnights to come out. I'm so excited for Taylor Swift's new album, Midnights. Who knows what we're going to get? Are we going to get more Taylor Swift with a hard R and a hard T? You know her. She's that girl who sits hard in the grass tea. And writes down Taylor Swift. She writes down all her lyrics and she spills her heart. Or are we getting Taylor Swift with a long A and a soft F, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Are we getting that hip, short hip, hip? A. Are we getting big stadium pop? Are we getting a mixture of both? What kept Taylor Swift up at night that she was able to make a concept album called Midnights? We're going to find out on Thursday, but I don't think so, honey, that we have to even wait seconds. That long. Taylor Swift is one of my favorite artists, and I want her album right now. I just too. Know that this album is going to be one that I listen to on repeat, and everyone is going to be Five doing seconds. The same. I don't think so, honey, that I have to still sit in silence until I fill the air with the sound of Midnight.
And that's 1 minute. Wow. The enthusiasm. And I'm sorry, reader, you should see Matt sort of turned off the switch in his brain, and now his face is fully neutral and even angry, I would say.
Oh, it was so tiring. It's really hard to be effusive, Bo. You know?
I don't know how you do it. You're one of the most effusive people I know, and you do it so well, and people love you for it.
I am pretty effusive.
So Matt is just a true luminary. You see, like, and literally, you see the light from within. Like, I love this man.
But also, I don't think I so, honey, should leave here. You spent. Like, that is why you boys created it, because you have so much to give, and it is a forum for giving your everything.
Thank you for saying that. There is nothing, there is no greater compliment than what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for saying it.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Bowen, are you ready and excited to do your I Don't Think So, Honey?
I'm excited.
Period. This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, using gut health as a way to mask an eating disorder, okay? There are people out here who are using these two words to be like, I'm eating chia seeds all day, every day, and that's it, and that's for my gut health. No, you want, like it's they no, they say this shit, that's fine, but then they always end it with, look at my abs. That's gut health, that's chia seeds, or whatever the fuck they're drinking and eating, okay? It's so fucking transparent to me that the people who are not experts, who are not qualified to be giving out this advice on TikTok or fucking Instagram reels, to be like, it's gut health. You don't know the first thing about the damn microbiome in your fucking stomach. You don't know name one of the trillions of bacteria or enzymes that are in there. I dare you. Then I'll pay you $1,000 if you're gonna fucking shill for chia seeds. I don't know why chia seeds is my example, but gut health is a legitimate thing, but it's being used as a mask.
Wow. That's 1 minute.
Guys.
Hi, I'm Teddy Mellencamp Aravalle or whatever. And the way that I get my gut health together is I starve myself. Sign up for the app. Literally.
If you're a true dietitian, like someone who has a title, I whatever, this is, I don't mean to.
Like accountability coach.
Well, I'm saying like, just this kind of
I get,
like there's a very thin line. Gut health is a concept that is, you know, real and that can be very...
Drink your kombucha, stay regular.
Very that. There are some of these influencer folks out there in the influencing space, which is a very powerful space, mm-hmm. as we know. And wield a lot of power in that space for good reasons, for bad reasons, for neutral reasons. They're kind of pushing the gut health agenda in a way that is, I think, a little shady. I think a little scary.
And no one is saying chia seeds are not a superfood. We all accept that they are a superfood.
We love chia seeds.
Like Aztec runners who needed to get through a day, it took care of
them. The historian.
But it is not the entirety of a diet. It is not a way of life.
There you go. There you go.
Guy, who is the most interesting historical figure?
Oh, do you know who Hypatia of Alexandria was?
No. I've heard the name.
They made a Rachel Weisz movie about her. She was a lady mathematician in Alexandria, and she figured out a bunch of stuff about the way the planets moved. And then they killed her and they cut her skin off with pieces of pots because they thought she was a witch because she was not Christian or the other thing they were supposed to be.
A man.
Yes. I mean, that's probably not the answer, but I love Hypatia of Alexandria.
I do too. My now. God. I'm so happy I asked. So this is Guy Branum's. I don't think so, honey. Are you ready and ready to steam?
Yes.
Okay, your time starts now.
People who leave the History Channel show alone because they miss their family. I don't think so, honey. Alone is a television program on the History Channel where people are dropped somewhere in the Canadian wilderness with 10 modern objects and have to survive as long as they can. And people do not leave because they miss their family. They leave because they are starving. They leave because they tried really hard to kill a deer and did not kill a deer. They leave because their gill net did not work. And I am tired of these people, like real people, fighters on Alone. They get pulled off of the show because they lost so much weight that their blood pressure is artificially reduced. Those people leave like heroes, but yes. People who leave because they miss their family are fucking weak. And if they got one of the 10 spots to go on Alone, they should let themselves slowly starve to death the way that everyone else does and not be whiny about how, oh, I didn't properly process my daughter dying 2 years ago. Get over it and catch some fish. I don't think so, honey.
Really good guy.
Amazing.
That's
guy.
1 minute. Are you guys caught up on Survivor this season?
I'm not.
Yes, I am.
Talk about it. This is my Tar and Survivor, my two pieces of missed homework. Go, talk.
Survive Tar.
I feel like we have some personalities this year.
We've got a good season on our hands. And Bo, I'm excited for you to binge. When you do finally get some, and I'm going to say this word, deserved time off. The man doesn't stop.
Oh my God. I'm going to binge tonight.
I like that there's no premise. I like that there's no premise. And Matt, did you spot when there was the thing about the woman who was accused of cheating at professional poker? Did you realize that the guy who accused her of cheating was brains versus bronze versus beauty? He was the hot Jewish poker player on Team Brains.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Who is your front runner for this season?
Oh, I forget. I feel like I binged all three of them very quickly, and I feel like it takes me 5 episodes to just have them coalesce in front of me. What do you think?
The answer is Carla.
A name like Carla.
She is an iconic Latinx lesbian who sort of giving Richard Hatch in the way she's observing it all.
Wow.
And she's her great. Social gameplay has been on display, and you know she's getting a good edit because they constantly cut to her to just comment on things. Mm. And the edit that she's getting is the all-seeing but also very doing player. You know what I mean? Like, it's giving under the radar in a way that other people think they are but are not.
Tragic. I'm saying a name like Carla is tough. Like, if there's a Carla on Survivor, you know they're going far.
Period. And you should.
That's a rule of culture.
Which one is that again? I'm forgetting.
58.
That's rule of culture number 58.
If there's a Carla on Survivor,
you know they're going far.
Now,
but Matt, I would encourage you to just try a little bit of Alone on the History Channel. It answers the question.
This sounds fascinating.
What if people went on Survivor and there were no social game, and also they were mostly white supremacists?
Okay. a question I needed the answer to. It sounds like, yeah, okay, good. Good. I mean, I have a big night tonight. Potomac is on. You don't really engage with the Housewives.
I don't. And
that's a shame.
We would encourage you to start, to be honest.
Okay. The thing is I, from Chelsea lately, I have like two seasons of New York and like, and I tried to watch all of Beverly Hills so that I would have more to talk to gay guys about. Mm-hmm. But I crapped out just after the backdoor pilot for Vanderpump Rules. But I would like to be more conversant in these things. Like you guys, there are so many times when I listen to your podcast and there are just like 15 minutes of the name Dorit and Dorinda.
Gobbledygook.
And I'm like, I would, and also enough of these things are, people should not be using the word Aviva without me being able to engage in it. If you're using the Hebrew word for spring, I want to know what's going on.
Oh my God.
You're so right. I feel like your drag name should be Aviva.
Guy, I would just recommend you start with Salt Lake City and get caught up there because there's the least homework to do.
Yeah,
and it's very much top of mind conversationally for gay guys and the culture at large, I would say.
All right.
And you're going to like it because it's a crime thriller.
Also, I hear lots of Jews.
There's two. Two?
Lisa and Meredith or no?
Lisa is Mormon. Down. Oh, but she's culturally Jewish. Isn't
culturally Jewish. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Lisa and Meredith. Meredith, she's Jewish. And then, but it obviously, and I do think that you will find a lot of interesting stuff in there about the Mormon of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Well, look. There are moments in life that you will remember, and this was one of them.
100%. I'm sorry. I did a quick Google. If you heard typing sounds, I was just quickly Googling Lisa Barlow Jewish. And yes, her family was Jewish. But
Lisa
she was not
Barlow
religious.
Jewish. Yeah, okay.
Well, thank you for a lovely Los Culturistas. I have missed you guys a great deal. It was lovely to have some talk.
Oh my gosh, this was truly the best part of my week.
Oh, and to have good meat to chew on, and to have, thank you for making me watch Tar. I maybe wouldn't have watched it otherwise.
You know what? I first of all, I don't believe you would not have watched it.
I mean, it might have taken me like months or something, you know, frequently. You
I mean, here's the thing, theater. Like Bowen is going to see it. I'm going to wager that Bowen will see it at some point over the next week. Even I think that he's not going to be able to stand it. And then it's going to occupy time on next week's episode too, because I just know he's going to have a lot to say.
Oh, yeah.
Even if it's a different opinion than us.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially if
I'll wager that it won't be too different. My two very smart friends have made very interesting points.
But Bowen Yang is first and foremost his own person.
Absolutely.
It's very true. Okay. Well, we end every episode with a song.
Good vibrations. Yeah.
To listen to that song.
Beach Boys.
Listen to the Beach Boys, Good Vibrations, Smile, the Lost Brian Wilson.
Bowen Yang is revealing his knowledge of
I love the Beach Boys.
He loves American culture.
Bye.
Bye.
There's a new sparkling water beverage from the makers of Bubbly, Bubbly Burst.
It's bursting with fruit flavor, no added sugar, and all smiles.
Bubbly comes in a variety of 6 fun flavors that taste incredible. And with no added sugar and low calories, there's a lot to smile about.
I don't know about you, Matt, but it's my perfect beverage for catching up on my favorite shows with.
Yes, Lil Bowen. Bubbly Burst has antioxidant and immune support, keeping me feeling great all day long.
You deserve that. Try new Bubbly Burst.
You know that I feel like it's really important to express yourself.
I know that about you.
You got to put your true self out there, okay? And those classic Crocs, clogs, and sandals let you do just that.
Between the rainbow of colors and the Jibbitz charms, you can create a unique look. And I mean, literally, no one else will have shoes exactly like yours.
Hey, you know, it doesn't get more comfortable than Croc clogs and sandals. They're just the perfect blend of comfort and creativity.
Visit crocs.com to explore the latest styles and Jibbitz charms.
When the music of Celine Dion makes sweet Canadian love with the Oscar-winning film Titanic, you get Titanic, a campy, unhinged, chaotic night out.
Find out what really happened to Jack and Rose on that fateful night from Celine Dion's totally real and historically accurate perspective.
Some say Titanic is the best gay nightclub in the city, and those people are me.
And me. So set sail with this kooky, crazy off-Broadway hit and get tickets today at TitanicMusical.com.
Get tickets today at TitanicMusical.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.